Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is your host, Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. Well, autism is a subject we've covered several times here on HealthLink On Air, worth every moment we discuss it. It's a devastating diagnosis for kids and their families, and children who develop autism spectrum disorder need assistance in many cases for their lifetimes. Well, this morning we're concentrating on autism spectrum disorder as a way to set the stage for a conference that will take place here in Syracuse this week, filling the On Center with interested parents and professionals, and we'll begin with two guests who will tell us about their participation and their experience. First, let me introduce you to Dr. Carol Grant, PhD, Director of the Margaret L. Williams Developmental Evaluation Center. Good morning, Dr. Grant.
Good morning, Tricia.
That's a long name. I'm wondering how it all fits on a business card. We're also joined by Carrie Fitzgerald. She's the parent of a child with autism. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning.
Now, first, Dr. Grant, let's talk about the event. Make sure we get the details in because we'll get involved in our conversation and we don't want to run out of time. Tell us about this event.
Well, we're very excited about this event. We have invited Carol Gray, who is a internationally recognized presenter on autism. She is a special ed teacher by training, and she has worked considerably number of years with young children with autism and devised strategies that are helpful in supporting children with autism both at school and home. As you probably know, Tricia, children with autism often have a difficulty in understanding what's expected of them and understanding what's going to happen next. And Carol Gray has created some wonderful, very concrete, practical strategies to help the children understand what's expected of them so that they have the opportunity to match that expectation. And she does this through what she calls the social stories and visual schedules and all kinds of more visually based information that help the children prepare them for events and classroom experiences.
Very good. Well, let's make sure we get the details in now for the conference. It's this Tuesday, April 29th,
yes.
Being held at the
Syracuse On Center, downtown,
from what time?
8 o'clock till 4:30.
Okay. And people can register.
Yes, we will accept walk-ins.
And we'll give registration information here at the end of the conversation. But I want to go back to something you were saying. You were talking about children with autism and their expectations. These are communications disconnects, aren't they?
Well, they really are. They're at all levels in terms of understanding what is being spoken to them or, you know, being expected of them, as well as their ability to express what their own wants.
Right.
They may be able to recite the whole Disney program, but not be able to articulately say, I want juice when offered in options, or to make choices or to clearly say what it is their intents are. And
so,
I know, Carrie, you've had some of those experiences with your son.
Right,
yes.
And we're going to talk about Carrie's son in just a second, but I want to go back. I want to make sure that we cover this for our listeners. I want to talk about the spectrum for a moment because that's kind of confusing to me, but you were able to explain it to me. It's children of varying abilities, but they're still considered to have autism.
Correct.
So tell me about that spectrum.
Well, first let me say that, and I always want to preface everything with saying, autism is a neurobiological disorder.
Mm-hmm.
It was not until 1960 that they acknowledged that there was something different about the way that children process information from a neurological, neurochemical perspective.
In fact, physical perspective.
Right.
Yes.
Parents were blamed, and it's just horrific to even think about today, but parents were blamed. Mothers in particular were called refrigerator mothers and blamed. And so if parents ever pick up any old literature, you may see this judgment cast on them for causing disorder. So no, it is very much a neurobiological disorder, and it has varying expressions.
Mm-hmm.
So the three criteria that we look at when we're evaluating a child for consideration of autism is communication. Are they communicating typically? Are they understanding what's being said to them? Or are they using an alternative atypical way, such as not able to even, as I said earlier, ask for a glass of juice or select juice versus milk? And social, do they relate typically? And the big criteria that we look for is what we call joint attention, and that is being able to focus on one thing together and the reciprocity, that is having a two-way conversation, where just like we're having, you're asking me questions and I'm responding. So we are reciprocating, if you will.
Right.
Children with autism, you will see that the children will throw out words or gestures, but they will not pick up on the reply.
They don't seem to be aimed at something.
It's not interactive, right.
Okay, and what's the third one?
The third one is there's what we call resistance to change, or the preference to keep things the same, and that is sort of a behavioral definition where we see kids who, they get it, be given a set of trains, they will line the trains up rather than play more in a pretend way with the trains going to the station to get them to pick up the people to go to the beach or so forth. That rather they just would line them up as objects. So the repeating the same activities over and failure to go into pretend play. There's also some other more typical, I say cautiously, because there's no one behavior that defines autism. And that is the scary piece. Every behavior that we see in some children with autism, we see in normal development and we see in other kids.
Sure.
So this is a very, it's to make the diagnosis is a very complex challenge.
I really strongly encourage
families go to appropriate places to get that diagnosis.
Very good. And that's where you come in, Carrie. Tell me about your son.
Well, he's going to be 5.
And
in
what's
May.
His first name?
His name is Aiden.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, his current teacher calls him sparkly because he's very resilient. He's very joyful. For all that we put him through with therapies and everything, he always bounces back. He's very resilient. But he currently is attending Juonio in preschool, and he currently does have he has a one-to-one aide that helped him, and he's very visual, like Carol had mentioned. He really does need schedules to kind of help him for each part of the day, and you know, just kind of a breakdown. We use a lot of first this, then you can do, you know, what he might want to do,
right?
To get him to do different activities and
now
things.
Was he diagnosed similarly to the way Dr. Grant just explained?
Yes,
what
very
was it
much
that
so
made you seek a diagnosis?
Around, you know, before he was, right before around 2 years old, basically he was the lack of language. He had started to say mommy and daddy earlier on, but then kind of that dropped off, and then he didn't say that. He didn't learn anything new. He had a lot of sensitivities in regards to food textures, in regards to playing with Play-Doh. He went right with crayons. He was just very sensitive and fearful of it.
Relate to the resistance to change,
yes,
that Dr. Grant was
very
talking about.
He's very schedule-based. You know, he would know even down to if we went a certain route, if we went a different way, he would say no, you know, and he would get upset.
And he couldn't have been more than 2 or 3 years old,
right,
at that point.
Right, but he very much knew how each day was and how it should be, and he wanted it to stay the same. You know, as far as playing, he never really played with toys in a pretend manner or the way you should play with them. You know, he would line things up. He would, he liked a lot of the bells and whistles toys, and he would just hit the buttons repeatedly over and over and over again.
Wow.
So he never would play with us. You know, there was none of that interaction.
Very interesting. Now, Dr. Grant, you mentioned that Carol Gray will be here to speak, and she uses these social stories. Mm-hmm. Tell us what the social stories are, and then Carrie, I'm interested if that's been part of your experience.
Right. A social story is basically rehearsing with the child what's going to happen and giving them some alternatives. So if the child is going to go into the classroom and the teacher's not going to be there that day, they can rehearse that the night before. You're going to go to school and Mrs. So-and-so is not going to be there. You know what? These are some things you can do. You can go to the aide and say, can I stand by you? And so you're helping the child by giving them a leg up on knowing what's going to happen and some alternative strategies versus just melting down. Anxiety is a huge issue. If you don't know what's expected of you and things change on you, you get anxious. And when you get anxious, you know what, you can either cry or have a fit or a temper tantrum or just melt down.
And so you're teaching them coping skills.
Absolutely.
And has that been part of your experience, Carrie?
Yes, very much so, because he will melt down if something happens that's not expected to him. So we use a lot of, you know, visual schedules and a lot of social stories, you know, in regards to even recently going to the dentist to help out, even with his brother wasn't there the other morning, and that was a change for him, and it got him kind of confused about the whole morning. So, you know, kind of having an ability to you know, warn him ahead of time. Mm-hmm. In his own way, though, that is understandable to him, has hugely helped.
And manage his expectations.
Yes.
And so now it sounds to me like parents and professionals can go to this conference and learn about using these social stories from Carol Gray. That's the point, isn't
yes.
it?
Then yes.
Let's talk one more time about the conference, because I think we've whetted appetites, mm-hmm. and I hope many people will sign up to go. It's this Tuesday.
Yep, April 29th, 8 o'clock to 4:30 mm-hmm. At the On Center downtown in Syracuse, mm-hmm. and we encourage people to call and reserve a spot in advance to make sure that there will be a seat available.
Okay, and let's give them that phone number.
Okay, the phone number is 315-214-4643.
Very good, and we will put that on our HealthLink on Air website as well.
Terrific.
There's a cost involved.
Mm-hmm. It's $85 for professionals and $55 for parents.
Very good, very good. And listeners, if you have anyone in your life who could maybe be diagnosed with autism, or if you know of a child, why don't you let their parent or a professional know? I think this would be a great place for them to be. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Carol Grant, and thank you, Carrie Fitzgerald, for coming by this morning. We appreciate your time and your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, we do need to take a quick break for the news. When we come back, we'll have a conversation with Carol Gray, the main speaker for the autism program on Tuesday, so please stay with us.